It is Friday, March 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Republicans scramble to salvage U.S. President Donald Trump's health care overhaul.
They are still working on it. This bill is still a work in progress, and they're still looking for enough votes to get it and pass it on Friday.
We look at the British-born man who carried out a deadly attack near Parliament this week. And we preview the sequel to the popular 1996 film, Trainspotting. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump is continuing to pressure his fellow Republicans not to leave the nation's health care system intact. Meanwhile, the House of Representatives is gearing up for a vote Friday on whether to overhaul the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Trump has threatened Republicans with leaving Obamacare in place if they do not repeal and replace the law, a key promise during his presidential campaign. I spoke with VOA congressional correspondent Katherine Gibson. She describes the timeline surrounding the contentious debate over health care.
Late Thursday, President Trump had to step in and pretty much tell House Republicans that it was now or never on this health care vote. And that followed a day of incredible, extraordinary chaos and dysfunction as you had meetings up and down Pennsylvania Avenue with different groups of the Republican caucus negotiating with the president and with each other on what exactly goes into that health care bill and whether they could vote on it. They just couldn't reach an agreement on Thursday, so they canceled the vote, and that's when the president stepped in and said this has to end.
And what has been the Republican reaction to Mr. Trump's position on that?
Well, House Speaker Paul Ryan came out late last night and said they are still working on it. This bill is still a work in progress, and they're still looking for enough votes to get it and pass it on Friday.
Now, though, couldn't there be a difference between what is passed, say, in the House and potentially the Senate? It could still be.
Oh, most certainly. That's the bigger problem coming out of all of this. We're so wrapped up in the minute-by-minute chaos up on Capitol Hill that even if this bill does pass through the House of Representatives, it has almost no chance of passing through the Senate in the form that the House has sent over. So that could be a huge problem, not only for Republicans, but for President Trump over in the White House.
Is this Trump health care plan different from the existing Affordable Care Act?
It's a matter of difference between the subsidies that were in Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act is commonly known as, and this bill, which gives tax credits. Now, part of the problem in the chaos on Capitol Hill is that the more conservative wing of the Republican Party, the so-called House Freedom Caucus, objects to the subsidies and wants that changed because they think the bill is still too close to Obamacare.
And I believe some of it would direct some of the control of health care more to the states as opposed to the federal government?
That's absolutely right. Selling insurance across state lines as well, and giving money to the states to make their health care coverage decisions.
And how do the Democrats, I mean, they're the minority party, but how are they viewing all this?
Well, you know, the Democrats aren't exactly known for playing a good political strategic game, but they are playing a masterful game right now. They are stepping back and just letting the Republicans carry on with this chaos and saying, we don't need to do anything here. Nancy Pelosi came out yesterday to speak to reporters, and her body language was incredible. She was almost gleeful. She told us at the very end that no matter what happens, if this bill passes or if this bill fails, they have backed themselves into a politically difficult corner. And I tend to agree with the Democratic minority leader on that issue.
Just one other thing. President Trump, of course, comes from a business background, and he's probably used to when they're conflicts in a corporation, you know, this is the way it's going to be done or else. Government operates quite differently.
Well, that's true, but the president actually took a page out of his own playbook, The Art of the Deal, on Thursday night when he just said, I will walk away if you can't get this vote done on Friday. If you guys can't pass this, then we will keep Obamacare in place. And that's straight out of his playbook. So we'll see if that actually works for the president.
Okay, thanks, Katherine.
You're welcome.
That's VOA congressional correspondent Katherine Gibson. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Andrew, I'm sure there's a lot of reaction to this on social media.
lots of people talking about this on social media. And as Catherine mentioned, there's a bit of political gamesmanship from the Democrats. And we're seeing that on social media with hashtag kill the bill. People have coalesced around this hashtag and they're using it to mobilize people on social media to call their members of Congress and encourage them to vote no. And what we've seen now are a number of members of Congress tweeting out saying, I've received 2,500 phone calls in the past 2 days. 2,400 of them have been against this bill. Only 100 have been for it. So it's kind of going full circle. You have people using social media to mobilize, contacting the congressman, and then the congressman parlaying that information to their constituents on social media to show the unpopularity of this bill. Now, the flip side of that is that you have others saying, well, it's a step in the right direction, at least. It's better than nothing. But in an odd kind of way, you have Democrats and siding with moderate Republicans and conservative Republicans. So it really is across the board not getting a lot of support. And so it has been a struggle. And there's also this political jockeying going on social media. A lot of questions about whether it will pass or fail, who's going to vote yes or no, but also will it affect Speaker Paul Ryan? Will he stay on if it fails? Now, President Trump says that, yes, there are no doubts he'll remain in the speakership, but there are people questioning that, saying this is his signature issue, entitlements and health care and cost cutting really wraps in all of his signature issues. If this can't pass, will he stay on? So a lot of that political questioning going on as well.
And I believe you have something else?
Yes. So it's Friday. It's a light day. We'll end with something happy. It is Red Nose Day in the United Kingdom. Now, this is the charity event sponsored by Comic Relief to raise money for children in need around the world. So you'll see a lot of people on social media wearing red noses today to raise awareness. You're seeing celebrities offer things for auction, like celebrity chef Jamie Oliver is auctioning off cooking lessons. British PM Theresa May auctioning off a pair of red velvet shoes that she's wearing today to mark the occasion. But perhaps the one thing that's getting the most attention is that Richard Curtis, who's one of the co-founders of Comic Relief, he was the director of a film, Love Actually, a very well-known romantic comedy. They're doing a little sequel called Red Nose Day, Actually, where they're updating everybody and where the characters are about 14 years after the movie came out. So a lot of attention being paid to that. Great for people in the UK who want to watch that. Unfortunate for people in the US. They're complaining because this doesn't air until May 25th. In the U.S. when the U.S. does its own Red Nose Day.
Yeah, they'll have to wait a while.
Yes.
All right, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Trump gives the go-ahead for the Keystone XL pipeline. Suspected Mosul mustard gas victims are released. Latvia-Russia ties are shaped by Soviet history, but marred by politics. And a House panel investigating Russian hacking wants more details from the National Security Administration and the FBI. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
When we think of planets in our solar system surrounded by rings, most of us, of course, think of Saturn. In a new NASA-funded study, scientists at Louisiana's Purdue University theorize that our planetary neighbor, Mars, also had rings at one time during its history and may have them again sometime in the future. The scientists created and studied a model that proposes a good amount of material was blown into space after an asteroid or other celestial body slammed into the red planet and then went on to form a planetary ring. The study suggests that later, as the ring material spread further out in space, it gathered to create a moon. Meanwhile, scientists are also saying that the Martian moon Phobos is getting closer to the planet. The model proposes that in perhaps 70 million years, the moon will break apart and become a new set of rings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear about an update of the hit film Trainspotting. London police said Friday they've made two more arrests in connection with the attack near Parliament. Police officials identified the attacker who killed four people near Parliament as Khalid Massoud, a Briton who converted to Islam and had a lengthy criminal record for weapons possession and other charges. I spoke with Sajan Goel, the International Security Director with the Asia-Pacific Foundation in London. I asked him what about Massoud's background might have steered him towards radicalization.
Well, Khalid Massoud is unusual in one way, and that is his age. He's 52. Most of the terrorists that have carried out attacks have been of varying ages, but it's often been between the age group being a teenager and in the mid-30s. Where Khalid Massoud has some similarities to other individuals that have carried out terrorist attacks on behalf of ISIS is that he has been involved in criminal activity in the past, sometimes violent activity, and many of those individuals that have been involved in criminal activity or have had a propensity to violence have ended up being recruited by ISIS for various reasons. Some have been cultivated through the internet. Others have bought into the ideology of the group. It is unclear where Khalid Massoud fits into that particular aspect, and that is something that only the authorities will hopefully be able to uncover in the passing days.
He did spend some time in prison, and perhaps he might have been radicalized at that time.
It is possible that prison played a role in his radicalization, but I personally think that it is more likely what has taken place in the last few months that has triggered his radicalization, because a lot of these individuals that are lone actors, they rapidly become radicalized. It's not a process of years. And it's very often through the internet where the ISIS intelligence apparatus, known as the EMNI, have been recruiting people. And we've seen those examples play out in cases in Belgium, in France, in Germany, and now, unfortunately, in the UK as well. So prison is, of course, an angle. I wouldn't rule it out. But I think the internet has probably played a much greater role in Khalid Massoud's radicalization.
And this has been termed as inspired by Islamic State, as opposed to directed by Islamic State. So it wasn't as though he was perhaps even known to Islamic State. This was something he just felt motivated to do.
Well, again, I think it is a very important issue that needs to be looked at in more detail, because very often there's been this perception that some of these individuals that have carried out these lone actor attacks were inspired by ISIS. That is, of course, there. But then it turned out they had been in online contact and communication with members of ISIS. And an attack can be directed by the group, like in the Paris attacks a couple of years ago, or they could actually be specifically assisted by ISIS through online communication. So being inspired, I find, is very often tagged with assistance from ISIS.
I've also heard that in ISIS propaganda, you know, in previous months, they would encourage followers to travel to Iraq and Syria and fight. But now, but more recently, there has been messages of the kind of attacks that we have seen recently, such as in Berlin or Nice, or just recently in London.
Very much so. And this is very important, because it has become increasingly harder now for ISIS to recruit fighters from the West. In fact, their former head of external operations, before he was killed in a drone strike, Abu Muhammad al-Adnani, said that the door has been closed by the West. And therefore, wherever you are, whichever country you are in, try and carry out attacks. It doesn't matter what you do, what weapon you use, just kill. And it was a very chilling and frightening statement that he made. And a lot of people have heeded the call. They've adhered to his doctrine and have been doing just that, trying to carry out attacks, whether it is involved using a knife or turning a car into a lethal weapon, as we've seen in London. There have been a whole host of attacks, and many of these individuals have not traveled to Iraq and Syria. In fact, they've never been to these countries ever before, yet they have heeded the call from ISIS.
Sajan Goel, the International Security Director with the Asia-Pacific Foundation in London. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sagan, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. Academy Award-winning filmmaker Danny Boyle reunites with his original Trainspotting cast 20 years later to make a sequel that deals with aging, accountability, friendship, and once again, betrayal. Those who've seen the original film remember four friends in their 20s. They're up to no good, living on the fringes, immersed in drug culture, and pulling a heist. Their exuberant youth and reckless lifestyle captured the popular culture of the 1990s. Trainspotting became a cult movie, and few could believe that a sequel could measure up. Yet Trainspotting 2 becomes a worthy companion to the original, as VOA's Penelope Pulu reports.
Hello, Mark. So what you been up to? For 20 years.
20 years have gone by since Mark Renton betrayed his gang after their heist in London, running away with the money. Now Mark, a broken man with a broken marriage, returns from Amsterdam to Scotland and to his frenemies, seeking redemption. Ian McGregor plays Renton.
These are the only people that really know him or that he knows. And I suppose it's a midlife crisis of sorts, or a life crisis of sorts, and that he's had a heart attack.
They put a tube in here. I've got a metal stent in my left coronary artery. Good as new, apparently. Good as new. Should last another 30 years, they said, but they didn't say what to do with those 30 years.
In a way, Trainspotting 2 is Danny Boyle's return to a familial place dealing with his own existential crisis. The filmmaker tells VOA he didn't want to make just another sequel. He wanted a companion piece reflecting on this aging man who failed to amount to much in life and stubbornly cling to a youth that is not there.
But I think we were all conscious returning to it, a huge part that it had played in our individual careers. It gave us a lift into the world, which was surprising. I think nobody expected it to work as a film. We set the film up to resemble the first film. Everybody was paid the same. That wasn't a huge amount of money. We didn't treat it as a cash cow, just cashing in on successful original. And it felt like we also wanted to surprise people with what the film has to say.
Choose life. Choose Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and hope that someone somewhere cares.
The reunion is dramatic. Simon, played by Johnny Lee Miller, schemes revenge, and Begbie, the most feral of them all, played by Robert Carlyle, recently escaped from prison and has vowed to kill Mark Renton. But the most redeeming character is Spud, the hopeless addict stuck in an endless loop of addiction and rehab. He attempts suicide but is saved by Mark Renton.
We benefited from addicts who told us that you can't really eradicate addiction. What they do in modern treatment is replace it with another obsession. An alternative obsession, which is often sport, which can be sport. But in Spud's case, it's actually this writing. And it was certainly true in Irving Welsh's case, the original writer. So it becomes something, actually, the film becomes, ironically, full of hope by the end.
Missed you, mate.
I missed you too, Spud.
Spud goes on to write the original story of Trainspotting. Boyle says he wants to create this loop between the two films, showing that, despite our aging process, our outlook on life is not linear. Like any other Danny Boyle film, Trainspotting 2 offers exuberant music, electrifying visuals, brutal scenes, and yet its success lies in the honesty and tenderness with which the filmmaker and screenwriter, John Hodge, treat the characters.
Choose life.
Trainspotting 2 is slated to be another Danny Boyle success. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Yeah, Trainspotting still has many fans out there. Well, here in Washington, U.S. officials say the Trump International Hotel does not violate conflict of interest laws by operating in a 19th century federal building. Democrats had asked the General Services Administration, the agency that manages federal properties, to look into the hotel's lease in the government-owned old post office, which is just blocks away from the White House. Federal law prohibits an elected official from being both a landlord and a tenant. The GSA said Thursday that Trump turned over his real estate empire to his sons, ensuring he will not personally profit from the luxury hotel while he's president. But government ethics experts say the Trump name on a Washington hotel may attract high-profile guests and foreign officials who hope that staying and eating there may be an advantage in dealing with the White House. The Trump Hotel has become a popular spot for protesters against Mr. Trump's administration. Well, that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. We've got a whole range of stories that might interest you. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us, and please have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On March 22nd, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson presided over a meeting of the 68-member Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS and emphasized that the coalition is unified, remains committed to the military defeat of ISIS, and noted the significant progress that has been made. On the battlefield, 23 coalition partners have over 9,000 troops in Iraq and Syria in support of the effort to defeat ISIS. The coalition has made significant progress in denying ISIS safe haven and building the military capacity of those directly engaged in fighting ISIS. Coalition operations have liberated 62% of the terrain ISIS once controlled in Iraq and 30% in Syria, including key cities in both countries. The number of ISIS fighters in Iraq and Syria is down by more than half since its peak in 2014. Coalition aircraft have conducted more than 19,000 strikes on ISIS targets, removing tens of thousands of ISIS fighters from the battlefield and killing over 180 senior to mid-level ISIS leaders, including nearly all of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi's deputies, his so-called ministers of war, information, finance, oil and gas, and his chief of external operations. The coalition has supported its Iraqi partners to achieve significant progress in the fight to retake Mosul. Iraqi security forces officially liberated eastern Mosul on January 24, 2017, and now are making significant territorial gains in the western portion of the city. To date, coalition efforts have trained nearly 90,000 Iraqi security force members, including Iraqi army soldiers, counterterrorism services soldiers, Kurdish Peshmerga, federal police and border security soldiers, and tribal volunteers. With the support of the coalition, Syrian partners have liberated over 14,000 square kilometers of terrain in Syria, including more than 7,400 square kilometers of territory since isolation operations around Raqqa began on November 5th. Coalition forces are now pressuring ISIS in Raqqa, its external operations headquarters, from where ISIS is plotting against coalition member interests around the globe. Hard-fought victories in Iraq and Syria have swung the momentum in our coalition's favor, said Secretary Tillerson. But we must increase the intensity of our efforts to solidify our gains in the next phase of the counter-ISIS fight. Degradation of ISIS is not the end goal. We must defeat ISIS.
That was an editorial. 30.